Blog Talk Radio.
So, hello there to anybody who chooses to listen. This is Daniel Stern. I'm the author of the forthcoming book, Swingland Between the Sheets of the Secretive, Sometimes Messy but Always Adventurous Swinging Lifestyle. It's coming out October 1st by Touchstone Books and Simon & Schuster. And with me in discussion is Shane Harris. He is a national security journalist in Washington, D.C. He is author of the book, The Watchers, The Rise of America's Surveillance State. And he's also senior writer at Foreign Policy Magazine. And lastly, a fellow at the New America Foundation. Did I get all that right, Shane?
You got it right.
So, obviously, Shane is a much more decorated writer than me. But before we get going, we should clarify to anybody who's listening why not only two writers of different esteem, but also with experience in markedly different subject matter are talking.
You don't think that the swinging lifestyle and national security surveillance are just obviously conjoined topics?
You know, what's interesting was I was thinking about that earlier today, and the most obvious parallel is that we both use the acronym NSA, just in different ways.
Oh, that's true. I never thought of that. That's true. Yeah. National Security Agency and?
No strings attached.
Yes,
so,
indeed. I never thought of that, Dan. Okay.
And then, you know, lots of secrets going back and forth. So,
sure, there was that parallel as well. Yeah, absolutely. Should you explain or should I why we're here talking to each other?
You go for it.
Okay. Well, we did not meet at a party. At least not the kind that you write about. Not the kind that you write about in your wonderful book, which I have actually had a chance to read before it comes out, and cannot recommend it enough. You and I have known each other since 1994, so almost 20 years. We're dating ourselves, but we went to college together at Wake Forest University in North Carolina, and were involved in a number of different writing endeavors together. We were basically sort of like writing partners, wouldn't you say? Like for much of college,
yeah.
We were in a comedy troupe together for about 3 years in college, and we co-wrote a screenplay our senior year of college. You and I are basically writing buddies and friends going back many years. So we're here talking as writers and occasional collaborators as well.
Yes, exactly. And we should also note, just to toot our own horns, that screenplay did become a finalist in the Sundance Lab competition. So
that is correct. Yes, it did.
Exactly. Now, we can talk about whatever, but one thing that we probably had talked about this at some point during our 20-year friendship, how did you get interested in writing from the get-go?
That's interesting. So I guess I'd always been sort of fascinated by, I was a huge movie buff when I was a kid, and then I loved going to the theater as I got a little bit older. And I guess I was fascinated by how it was that these stories that I was watching were actually made and how they were, created. And when I came to learn that, it was a process of writing a script or writing a screenplay, and then producing that I was sort of interested in the mechanics of that, I guess maybe even, sort of the behind the scenes of the creation of it. When I was in high school and doing theater, I actually, my freshman, I guess my sophomore year, there was the drama club at our school had a competition where they, we did a one-act play and a full-length play every fall, and they opened up the one-act play 1 year to student-written plays. And they had students had to enter to their one-act plays, and I entered and I won. And I sort of kind of got hooked on it at that point when I realized that I could actually put something down on paper and somebody would think enough of it, at least in my high school in Atlanta, to stage it. And I kind of got into it mainly through theater. I never intended to go into journalism. I mean, I was always interested in performance and comedy writing and the kind of things that you and I did when we were in college together. But then when I graduated In 98, I moved to Washington, and I'd majored in politics since, you know, who would ever major in theater, right, Dan?
Thanks, Shane. Thank
this
you.
It's highly, highly marketable degree, but you've turned up. No, but I majored, no,
doing, doing absolutely nothing with that degree whatsoever, but anyway.
You probably had to act many times in the pursuit of your lifestyle, although we can talk about that and sort of the, you know, what the performance that you have to put on.
Exactly.
No, anyway. Yeah, exactly. But no, when I graduated, I came to Washington, and I was interested in politics. I was interested in government and all those kinds of things. And a mutual friend of ours, actually, one night, we were out, and she said, well, you know, you need a job. You're interested in politics. You're interested in writing. You should go be a journalist. And really having absolutely no clue about how to do that, answered a job, like a wanted ad, basically, to be a researcher at a magazine. And, you know, about a year later of doing that, they taught me how to be a reporter. And so I've kind of been into journalism ever since. But it all really stemmed from that, just, I guess, fascination with how words are put together on a page and then they're consumed, whether that means that they're performed or, you know, they're read in a newspaper or a magazine. But how did you get into it?
Like a lot of things in my life, for better or worse, I just sort of ended up in it. Like you, like it started out in performance stuff. I was a loudmouth in high school, and so I was either going to be the one teacher gave me a choice. I was either going to be put in detention or I was going to go into the theater and just let out the energy there. So,
right.
And so I said, okay, I'll try that, and it just. I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. And then when the reason I chose Wake Forest was that it was a liberal arts school. It was tough academically, but also you could take part in performance stuff without having to major in it.
Right.
And I didn't
big,
know what I wanted
to
do.
Plus.
Yeah, exactly. And the facilities are really good there.
Yeah,
but
great.
It was also that freshman year with the comedy troupe that somebody just said, because, you know, I was still a loudmouth then. They were saying, oh, well, you should maybe look at this comedy troupe. And I had no idea what that was. And I auditioned and got in. And through that was the first time I started to learn how to write. And it was great because they were in these little snippets. I mean, you know, anything from like half a page to 10 pages in length, but they all had the same structure. They all had a beginning, middle, and end. They all had characters, and it was about the action. And so that's when I started to veer over into writing and then screenwriting and then, Swing Land, that's the first book I've written.
Yeah, and it's interesting you talk about, like, the you know, I found this to be true, too, when we were doing the comedy troupe. And we should tell people, you know, we would do sort of this big show every year where we would write like about 15 or 20 sketches that were all about parading life at Wake Forest. And it was like a multi-week process of writing and rehearsing and performing. But I found that the experience of having that structure and the deadlines and sort of the parameters that you had to work against when you're writing a sketch were actually really great training for how to write, because you weren't able to just sort of, you know, go off and spend months and months and months sort of indulging yourself in whatever you wanted to write. You had a show to put up, and it had to be a particular kind of humor, and it had to be very specific. And I mean, I thought that was really good conditioning, especially like when I went on to do journalism, which is completely deadline driven and the form is actually pretty rigid. I thought that was actually just really great training. Did you feel that way too?
Yeah, I was actually going to say that, yeah, there was the structure. Also, because there were, what were there, like 20 of us in the troupe at any given point,
yeah,
somewhere around that?
Mm-hmm.
Although, like you said, that there was this very, there was an expected type of show. There were, at the same time, these different types of humor, and you could mix and match. And I went, oh, I never thought that the joke could be funny that way. And it really did start to open my eyes to that. And I really appreciated that. And especially because with Swingland, the first book, like I had tried a couple times before. I was, well, maybe this is a television pilot. So I tried to write it as a television pilot, and it didn't really click. And then I tried to write it as a novel, fiction, and that didn't really click. And it was when I said, you know what I've always was able to do were those sketches and just sit down and say, this is the time I needed to do it,
yeah,
and this is what I needed to accomplish. Then everything started clicking, and where I had been floundering for a couple of years with the book, just came out in like a matter of, I think it was 9 months. And and it just I can't attribute it all to the structure, but that was a big part of it, because I said, okay, you have to sit down, you have to do it now.
So one of the things I've been, this is a good way to talk about, you know, what your book is, you know, which is coming out very soon, is about, and kind of, you know, how you got into it. Because it strikes me that, you know, when we were doing comedy together, the sketches that we wrote were all about, the main things of the sketch had to be parodying some aspect of life at Wake Forest. So we were writing very, like, self-referential humor, and we were writing about things that, you know, we were immersed in and that we were experiencing every day. And when I read your manuscript before it was published, I mean, one of the things that was shocking to me, because, I mean, it'll be interesting for people to know that, like, and I say this with all love towards Dan, like, you're, like, sort of the last person I would expect was, like, in what was a swinger.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's sort of just like, it's like a startling revelation. I was actually hanging out over the weekend with friends of ours from college, and, you know, people were being like, am I in this book? Did he really write this? Is this really true?
I'm assuming you're very diplomatic in your responses.
Oh, I just lied, and I made everything up. I said, you know, you all appear by name. There are orgies and masks. It's like something out of Eyes Wide Shut. Which it sort of is, but where
some,
I'm going with it,
some chapters are.
Yeah, exactly. But what I'm going with it is, it's, what's interesting to me is that, you know, you were, I mean, sort of living, you know, you were doing the lifestyle, and I presume you got into it not thinking you would ever write about it, but because it was something that you were interested in, and then obviously became really immersed in, and then, you know, you wrote a book about this, you know, very much this sort of, you know, experience that you had that was, you know, your kind of daily life. And I mean, I wonder, did you ever consciously think about kind of drawing back on the experiences that we had writing about comedy, about our everyday lives, when you had to sort of sit down and write about your now everyday life or this part of you? And did you draw on that experience at all when you were writing the book?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, when I started that, there was no intention of writing anything about it. You know, for personal matters that I discuss in the book, there was a reason why I sought it out. And so as I was experiencing it, it was probably 3 months into it, and this is sort of cliche, a lot of people say, oh, my life is a sitcom. A lot of weird stuff happened to me. And, you know, for instance, I ended up at the first group party, and I end up, you know, hitting my head on the ceiling fan in the middle of everything. Stuff like that. After a little while, and these things were happening one after another, and I just thought, wow, this is actually kind of funny. And with the very few people I would share the experiences with, they would laugh. And I thought, well, maybe there's something there. And I started to keep a journal. And, you know, luckily, since most of it happens over email until the actual experience, there's a lot of record of what I had done.
So you could go back and use those emails that you'd had with people that you met, and kind of that was your notes, if you will.
Exactly. And so I had that research and my memory and the journal, and I started to take that form from the comedy troupe and also screenwriting. I mean, if you look at scenes and everything, and I just started to say, this is the stuff that I know, let's just see what happens. And I just started to say, one day I'd wake up and I'd want to write about that party where I hit my head on the ceiling fan. Another day, I'd want to write about this, you know, senior citizen orgy that I somehow ended up at. And
oh yes. And why did you? Why did you really?
Because I'm open to all life experience for the most part.
It makes the book very credible, I will tell you that.
And so I didn't know what the book was going to be, and the few friends that I talked about, I'm writing this thing that has to do with lifestyle. And I would just keep writing, and eventually this overarching theme of self-sexual improvement sort of came out of it. And I went, oh, that's why I was doing it. And then
so you sort of started writing like, so you sort of, that's interesting, because like the book, I mean, people will see this when they read it, it kind of goes, one chapter is a sort of scenes, you at various, you know, stages chronologically and your sort of progression through the lifestyle. So one chapter will be that. And then the next chapter is, you know, more sort of a, you know, broad kind of, you know, memoirish and kind of tips and sort of more practical kind of writing as well, which is also very funny and actually very useful, and it's a little bit more introspective, and actually a lot of it's quite tender and really truthful. So you kind of started with the episodes, and then you filled in, for lack of a better term, like sort of the more memoirish kind of bookish part, if you like.
Yeah. I mean, the reason was as I was writing the episodes, you know, the individual personal experiences, I was thinking, man, can I really fill an entire book just with sex? Will some reader want to spend that much time reading about a stranger's atypical sex life? And I started to worry about that.
Well, 50 Shades of Grey, I mean, you know.
This was before 50 Shades came out, or before it exploded, I guess. And so I said, well, maybe if I can kind of dilute some of the subject matter with a how-to, which is sort of bland. Or not bland, but it doesn't have as much grit to it. And I thought, well, maybe that could work, and I could switch off, and maybe I could interweave it by the lessons I learned at each experience. And so I thought, okay, well, between the two of them, I've got enough words for a book, and that's why I did it. But there was also a personal reason for the how-to sections, which is when you're in the lifestyle long enough, you start to hear everybody's war stories. And the war stories almost exclusively center around some experience with another person who has no idea what they're doing. And they're not acting appropriately, or, you know, they don't understand the protocol. And I thought, well, because this lifestyle had been so good to me when it didn't have to, as a single male, you're really not wanted. I thought, well, maybe I could sort of, you know, help, you know, better it a little bit. And it's sort of, in a sense, sort of my Valentine to the love, to the lifestyle, just as a thank you note, in a sense.
Yeah.
This also kind of dovetails, because it's something with you, because your book, the Watchers, and I know you have another book coming out probably in 2014. I don't know the title of it, though. Did you say it was Kill Switch or something?
Yeah, Kill Switch is the tentative title, yeah.
And it's about cyber warfare.
That's correct.
Right? Okay, but what's going back to the Watchers, it's all about, it's creative nonfiction, essentially, is what it is, because you take the facts of what had happened after 9/11, or even partially leading up to 9/11, and you dramatize it without betraying the facts. So
that's right.
It's similar in a sense to what I did, where I took the real stuff. I changed everybody's names and a lot of locations and details, but, you know, and presented it in a dramatic fashion. But you took hard, fast facts and dramatized it. Was that difficult? Because that's not journalism.
Yeah, it's narrative nonfiction, creative nonfiction. It's frankly, I mean, one reason I did it is because, A, those are the nonfiction books that I love to read. I like to read nonfiction that reads like a story and that doesn't read like, you know, a lesson, or that doesn't read like a lecture. So I definitely wanted to do that because that was sort of an ambition of mine. I mean, it definitely drew more on my experiences learning how to write sketches and plays and screenplays than it did directly on how to do journalism and reporting. I mean, it's sort of similar to what, you know, you described, is I had sort of a body of material from my reporting, from, you know, interviews and from research and from reading and just sort of, you know, all the stuff that you do as a journalist where you're absorbing facts. And then I kind of had this, you know, this body of information. Then the question was, well, how do I present this? And I'm sure you went through a similar thing too, that, you know, it really is all about the structure of how you tell the story. You can't just dump all the information out there and expect that anybody is going to be, A, interested in reading it, or, B, that they're going to get anything from it. And in my case, I had this really kind of almost abstract subject matter where I was writing about basically data mining and surveillance. So all the things that you're reading about the National Security Agency today, and all the things that Edward Snowden, the former contractor, has been leaking about surveillance, the book is directly about that and about the people who are sort of instrumental in setting up many of these big data mining programs and these surveillance programs, mostly after 9/11. And what I found was that the human stories of those people, you know, why they got into government, why they were concerned about terrorism, why they decided that monitoring people's phone calls and emails was the best way to try and stop another terrorist attack, that was a really just hugely compelling story. I mean, the stakes were basically, you know, life and death in their mind. And they became the through line for this piece. And by watching them, you know, build these systems and decide, you know, in secret what these rules and these laws should be, you could convey all of that information that I've been collecting as a reporter, and you could do it in a way that read like a novel. You know, and I wanted it to be, you know, when you're dealing with technology and surveillance and secret programs, this is all very abstract, it's kind of opaque, and I thought there's got to be a way to bring that to life. And for me, doing it, it was just through narrative and storytelling. I mean, it's just, you know, as old as human history, practically. And it just worked. It worked really well. The thing that was hard about it was figuring out, was sort of the almost, not so much the writing, but the editing, and figuring out, you know, what order should this go in, and when do you introduce this character, and how do you keep the dramatic tension? Because you're right, you're dramatizing it. You're almost, in a sense, reimagining history for a reader. And what I did was I fell back on the things that we learned and practiced when we were in school and writing together. I storyboarded the whole book. And, you know, when I was, it's basically, it's a five-act structure, and I would put up pictures on the wall and index cards and, you know, sort of your like typical Sid Field screenwriting structure. And I really tried to develop a narrative arc to the book. Fortunately, and, you know, the facts actually went in that direction. The narrative actually is really true to how I think it pans out in history. But, you know, to me, that was kind of the only way to do it, because I didn't want to just sort of write, you know, I didn't want to write a dissertation. I wanted to write a story.
Yeah, because that was the one thing that I would think would be, when I write, I enjoy limitations because it makes me get more creative. But in your sense, you have the actual history of what happened. And to go, oh, well, this fact happening between these other two actually hurts the dramatic arc. And I would think that would have been very frustrating to try and make, like as you're saying, keep the dramatic tension and keep the story flowing without betraying the truth.
Yeah, that's right. What you have to do in those situations is you have to find moments where you do fill in the gaps, and you sort of have to be a bit more expository and straightforward in explaining to the reader, okay, well, since we last left our character, this thing happened, but now we're getting back to the drama. So there are those moments where you kind of have to step in, like, you know, I call it the Greek chorus moment, where they kind of step in and they explain to the reader what's happening. But, you know, what I also do is I purposefully chose one individual to build the story around. And his name is John Poindexter, and he was Ronald Reagan's national security advisor and is most known for being one of the lead figures in the Iran-Contra affair. And after 9/11, he came back to government with this very big, ambitious data mining program called Total Information Awareness, which is very similar to a lot of the stuff that you're reading about today that the National Security Agency does. And he kind of just had this, you know, just beautiful, you know, personal narrative arc. He was almost like something that had been written as fiction in a way. And he kind of presented himself as just a perfect, you know, narrative protagonist to build this thing around. And, you know, unfortunately, the dots just kind of all lined up in that story. I don't know whether, you know, for instance, in the book that I'm working on now, it doesn't have that same kind of, that quite sort of neat narrative through line as this one does. They don't kind of line up as much, or at least if the events do, I haven't detected them quite yet. It's a bit more like overlapping narratives, if you will. It'll still be narrative, but it won't be this sort of, you know, beginning, middle, end kind of thing that The Watchers was. And it's hard in nonfiction because, you know, particularly when you're doing journalism, you know, you can't rearrange the facts, obviously, to suit what you think is the best telling of the story. But I think what you can do is draw attention to certain facts and certain events that were momentous, and kind of, you know, bring them more into the foreground and spend more time talking about them and sort of point out to people how, in a way, these were pivot points or plot points, if you like. And as long as you don't leave out crucial information in between those points, you can sort of tell the story by drawing the reader's attention to key moments along the way. And I think in a lot of ways that's what historians do. You know, I mean, you know, you read great works of sort of, you know, magisterial works of history. They're not data dumps. They're drawing your attention to sort of key moments in the development of a person's life, or, you know, of a country or a war or whatever, and saying, look, these were the moments where the story fundamentally changed. And yes, lots of things, other things happened along the way, but these are the things that we have to bring forward to really understand the breadth of the story.
Yeah, I agree with that. In fact, I want to say, I had just seen a quote by, I think, Elmore Leonard, something when he, I think he said when he writes, he tries to eliminate anything the readers would think is boring. And when I wrote mine, it's, you know, there was, especially when my editor got it, it was, this is a funny story, but let's not use it. It doesn't serve you overall. So with mine, it was, you know, and I was also appreciative of that because then it didn't look like I was as promiscuous as I was during that time frame.
So you're leaving out key information here, aren't you?
No,
you're an even bigger whore than this book makes you out to be.
We leave that up to the judgment of the reader.
Oh, yes, and your mother.
Yeah, we'll deal with that later. but I know that you have to go check out what POTUS has to say about a serious situation. So we can, you know, maybe continue this at a later date, but I appreciate you coming in and discussing your writing process and saying good things about my book. And, you know, I look forward to reading Kill Switch when you either publish it or allow me to read a manuscript, and I hope The Watchers is going very well.
Yeah, and I wish you the best of luck. It's been, for me, as your friend and your occasional writing partner, it's been really just so much fun to watch you go through this whole process and to talk with you about what it was like, you know, when you were in the process of finding an agent and finding a publisher. And, you know, so I've just really been kind of like rooting for you on the sidelines here, and I'm just like really totally excited for your big day, which is coming up very soon. And you know, I just can't wait to see what the reception is to the book. And it really, I'm not just saying this, you know, because we're friends, it's a truly good and very funny and often, as I said, very tender book. So I wish you all the success in the world with it.
Thank you. And we will be seeing each other soon.
Indeed. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Shane.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Bye.
Bye.
Left you on the debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. Familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. Trouble at the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working. Well, I left you on the debris. Now we both know you.